My name is Mrs. Llewellyn James Walker, and I live at 179 East Huron Street, Berlin, Wisconsin, 54923. I attended the University of Wisconsin 1927 to 1930 as Virginia Laurel Shaver. I was an undergraduate, graduated in 1930 with a Bachelor of Arts degree, as well as the university's teacher certificate. Question four, I was graduated from La Crosse, Wisconsin Central High School in 1925. As I was just 16, my parents sent me to Kemper Hall in Kenosha the next year because we were moving to Racine. They thought I was too young at 16. Now that I have children and grandchildren, I understand their point of view. Then I did not. My mother had had me registered at Wellesley from the time I was a little girl, but my grandparents wanted me to attend Lindenwood, whose president had been a friend of theirs when they lived in Virginia. Question six. Why did I select the University of Wisconsin? I had just always wanted to come to Madison. Number seven, Beloit seemed like too small a school. University of Chicago in those days was mainly considered a graduate school. University of Minnesota had no appeal. Harvard was too expensive at the time. Number eight, when I left for college, I took my clothes in a wardrobe trunk and my bedding in a steamer trunk. No car, no phonograph, dictionary, books, and so forth. Number nine, I went to Madison by train, shipping the trunks by train, and no one accompanied me. 10, nobody greeted me on arrival in Madison. 11, I had choosing courses for that first semester. My mother had driven me to Madison, and we had conferred with the registrar before I went to Lindenwood to be sure that the credits I took at Lindenwood would be transferred with full credit to Madison. Lindenwood required 2 credits of religion, which was not transferable. Hence, I lost 1 credit when I transferred to Madison because only 15 credits were transferable for a freshman, even though the grades were exceedingly good. Number 12. A student orientation session, I don't remember one, if there was. Number 13, nor a faculty advisor. The registrar was very helpful as to my setting up my subjects, and probably we spent an hour in his office at that time. Number 14, I was an English major with a French minor and an education minor, I suppose, too, because I had the teacher certificate. At that time, teaching was the best field for a woman to go into, so that's why I chose it. 15, male and female students expected to dress for class, and the boys wore chinos and corduroys, sweaters, suit coats, sport coats. Girls wore silk stockings and heels, not high heels, medium heels, silk suits, hats, gloves. We all looked like we were presentably dressed. And the professors, number 16, the professors generally about the same. Some of them were more casual than others. And as for a professor's particular attire standing out, we all remember William Ellery Leonard striding across the lower campus in his cape and a hat pulled down in the front because of his phobia of not going beyond, I think it was 6 square blocks around the campus. And his was the most outstanding, of course. 17, students were expected to behave as ladies and gentlemen in class. 18, professors handling disciplinary problems. I don't remember any particular one. It was just assumed that we would go to class and listen and learn our lessons. Classes, yes, were generally co-ed. This is question 19. Women were treated in the same, in terms of course expectations and materials the same way. Many reference books were in the library downstairs in Bascom Hall. Those were the limited edition ones, and we all went up there and used those for reference books, of course. Number 20, an average lecture was probably, I think Bill Kiekhofer's Econ in Music Hall was 800, but otherwise I think they were about from 100 to 200 or 300. I didn't have any lab classes at Wisconsin because I had taken 10 hours of botany with lab at Lindenwood and been able to go into Shaw's Garden, which is now the Missouri Botanical Garden in St. Louis, for many lab experiences. Number 21, classes were generally, I suppose in this day and age you would say they were formal, but I don't know of any specific examples that I can quote you at the moment. Number 22, we were expected to bring our books and notes to class for that particular class, and we didn't have the backpacks you all have now. We had to carry them in our arms and got slightly lopsided sometimes from carrying them, and we'd change from arm to arm because they were heavy. We didn't have all the books on all the days, of course, because 4-credit courses were on 4 different days. 3-credit were Monday, Wednesday, Friday. 2-credit were usually Tuesday to Thursday. We only took the books we needed. Number 23, the teaching styles of the majority of the professors, whose lecture and then discussion classes with assistant teachers, TAs I suppose we call them now, and we volunteered for recitation and general discussion. That was just accepted. Number 24, in non-lecture situations, I guess I answered that just now, the students were, it was a matter of sitting around and discussing the lesson of the day. Number 25, I don't remember how we were addressed. I suppose my first name, probably, and we addressed our professors as Dr. or Mr. or Miss, whatever their title was. Number 26, no, we weren't truant, and I don't know of anybody that was or was caught. 27, course expectations were given to us, and for instance in sociology we had a specific list of every day, every class day was given with each chapter with written, with expectation of written answers to all exercises, written answers to alternate exercises, and all down from February to June it was given to us at the beginning of the course. That was Sociology 140 with Edward Ellsworth Ross, who headed the sociology department in those days, and who in our junior year supervised the floating university, which went around the world on a liner and took one of my best friends and many other students, not only from Wisconsin, but from all states in the Union, all colleges, and they had a wonderful year. We used to stay up till 3 in the morning listening to the tales of their exploits and their experiences during the next year. I don't remember a lot of memorization. It was mainly understanding the course material and we had exams halfway through, as I remember, as well as finals, and then some quizzes as well, and many of them. 29, I've already answered that about how often they met and how long did most classes. I think it was about a 50-minute class for most everything. 30, how much homework will depend on the course. For English, we had to write out we had to write out themes for some, and then those had to be corrected, of course. But those were for each class when we had that type of class. But mostly it was reading and being able to discuss it when we got to class. 31, professors had office hours, but I don't remember our doing too much about conferring with them greatly. I think a few occasionally I did, but I don't remember about the rest of my Confederates. 32, did you have contact with professors in non-academic? Yes, when it came to Panhell Ball, for instance, I remember we were asked to take Mr. and Mrs. Fred Holt, who was, I believe, registrar at the time, and we did, and they were very kind and informed us that they had a cab ordered for the hour they wished to leave and that we should stay and enjoy the dance at the Union, that was. 33, how are course grades generally determined? Term papers, quizzes, class participation, final exams, they all had a part. They varied, I think, in the weight of each, according to the professor, perhaps. 34, what percentage of students in each class received A, B, C's, and failed, and so forth. I don't know exactly the percentage. I know that some people graded on curves, which we thought were most unfair because we thought that the courses where the group of students in the course is varied so that in many times there would be many more A's should be given and many more failed should be given, while grading on a curve seemed most unfair. Though I will say that I valued all the A's I got at Wisconsin far more than I got valued the A's I got at Lindenwood or anywhere else, because I felt I had so much more competition at Wisconsin. 35, my parents were proud of my grades, and they expected me to do as well as I could, and I think that's all we should ask of any of our children. 36, final exams. We had final exams at the end of the year. There was a break of about a day in between when they started. They were given by giving us typed list of questions, usually from 1 to 3 pages long. We were given blue books, as we called them, that were lined to write our answers in them, but there was never such a thing as an open book or a take-home exam. I think our professor graded some of them, but I think the assistants also did that, and they also proctored them. I'm answering 37 when I do that. The final exams were given at the end of the year, at the end of the semester, of course. But cribbing, I never saw any done. I suppose it could have been done without us knowing it, but I don't know that anybody was even, I never saw anybody caught or sent out of the room for cribbing. But, when we finished our exam, we had a specified time to write, of course. Final grades were mailed if we enclosed a penny postcard. And I don't remember them being posted at all. They may have been in the professor's offices, but we put a penny postcard in our blue book, and that would be mailed to us, and then we got the final result. I never had lab courses at Wisconsin, so I don't know about the lab equipment there. 41, the professors who influenced us most. I certainly enjoyed Bill Kiekhofer's econ lectures, in fact, more than any, and I guess because I liked the subject so well, and that I remember that he felt our interest, and the subject was interesting to us, more so than many others. There were far more boys in the class than girls. I think there were probably, you could count on one hand, the number of girls in the lecture in those days, but we liked it, and we enjoyed his courses, and also Miles Hanley's History of the English Language was an outstanding one, as Otto Hagen's Art History, and James Grant's Political Science Elementary Law, which I like very much. Major Morphy's Music Appreciation was excellent. Miss Hord's teaching at University High was the most outstanding of all the education courses I had. Most of them, considered then as of now, most education courses are considered by the students and by those of us who have had them many years ago as Mickey Mouse. They are not worth the time and effort spent on the education courses. To actually have practiced teaching under someone as capable as Miss Horrid and who can teach us and let us observe their methods is the best background any teacher can have. But of course, to have a very thorough knowledge of their subject is the most important thing that any teacher can ever have. I'll jump to question 52 because I never lived in a Wisconsin dorm. Do you choose to live off campus? Yes, I had a friend from New York coming out, and so she and I decided to room together in the court up where the Villa Maria is. I can't think the exact name of the court right now, but her mother became ill, and she was unable to come back to Wisconsin to school. So in August of the year I was to enter, I appealed to the housing authority, and the only single room I could find was in Gath Inn, which was a long, narrow building housing 44 girls back of Cochran's, which is the area where part of Lowell Hall now exists. And I had a tiny room on the third floor. Fortunately, on the second floor, there was a friend from La Crosse who had come only to take a specific course in dance from Miss Dobler. And because there were so few people taking the course, Miss Dobler was unable to give it that year, and she decided to withdraw from Wisconsin. So she said, come down and take my room. We're paying the same amount, and then we'll tell Mrs. Gray, the house mother, that your room is available. We did so, fortunately, because on December 7th that year, I was in the bathtub when fire was yelled, and I got out faster than I ever did before or since, and threw my clothes in a comfort, put on a fur coat, and dashed over to the Gamma Phi house and took my clothes to Helen Bunge, who was a personal childhood friend and later Dean of Women at Wisconsin. Left my clothes with Helen and went on to the dance at 10:30. But I had no roommate then, and so after that, I moved into the Officidata house where I had been pledged, and my roommate was another friend who had been also living in Gath then, and so I had just the one roommate at that time. There were a couple of rooms in the house we called the tower rooms, and those accommodated three girls, and at one time I shared that with two other roommates. I think we didn't sign, I don't believe we signed a lease, maybe we did, for Gath Inn, but of course with the fire that had to be, the whole house was had to be closed, and so there was a matter of getting us all housed. The furnishings were very stark, a single bed, a dresser, and a chair, as I remember, and a lamp, and we had living rooms where we could meet our dates who came to get us. But of course, in the house, sorority house, that was, we had the whole downstairs, which was reception accommodations. And as far as the landlord, Mrs. Gray was very pleasant, and our house mother was delightful. And the other tenants were very nice. One of the girls who was unfortunate enough to have the fire start in the chimney flue between her room and the next lost everything she had at school except the clothes she had on up at the Alpha Phi house that night, including all her lecture notes, which was terrific, but everybody helped her out, and she came through with flying colors. I guess number 55, why did I choose to live it? It was quite a necessity right then after the fire. It was a good decision all around. I lived there for the 3 years, and also in the summer, I attended summer school in order to make up the credit that I had lost in transferring, and took sophomore comp and music appreciation in the summer school that year. And so I actually lived in the house 3 years and one summer school. And a room number 57, I had from one to three roommates. Number 58, our house mother was very pleasant and understanding, and I perceived her role as being a hostess for all of us, and a confidant if necessary. She was, I remember in summer school, she knew me and knew the people I was dating, and she, rather than have to get in at a definite time, gave me a door key so I could come in. But I tried to keep her confidence and come in when I was supposed to. 59, you can see it was a very pleasant relationship with a house mother. Did I turn to her for assistance? Not a great deal, but I knew she was there, and she had lived in Racine and knew my family who was living in Racine at the time. Number 60, a typical dinner, and we had two stretcher tables in our dining room. We dressed for dinner in just clothes that we would wear to school, silk dress or a blouse and skirt, or a suit. And the tables often had flowers on them. We had an excellent cook. The food was served by boys who were working their way through school, and many of the boys did that. They served meals in both fraternity and sorority houses, and it was they who were responsible for helping in the kitchen, too. And there were about, we must have had 14 to 16 girls at each table, and the house mother was present at the head of one table or the other. Manners. Everybody just, I don't remember anybody saying anything about it, but nobody did anything other than to sit up and, as you would at an ordinary dinner table, and eat like ladies and gentlemen, I guess. I don't remember prayers being offered. And the conversation at dinner was mostly about what courses, dates, music, what was going on campus. Quality of the food was very good. In fact, our cook baked us each a birthday cake at the time of our birthday. Well, my birthday was in the summer, and I said to her one day, "You can never bake me a birthday cake because I'm never here for my birthday." She said, "You choose a birthday, and I'll bake you a cake." So she did. I chose it 6 months from my birthday, so I had ended with having a birthday cake in February. 62. I didn't leave my sorority house before I was graduated, and only when I was graduated, that was it. Leisure time, number 63. How did we spend our free time? We didn't have an awful lot of it because we had an awful lot of studying to do. It took us, we had a long walk up Langdon and up the hill for classes, and some of the girls played bridge. I had played bridge, but I seldom played at Madison. And 64, where were the places on and off campus where your friends might go to relax? Well, Friday and Saturday nights were usually dates when we went to Esther Beach or Hollywood to go dancing. That was our favorite occupation. And on Sunday night, we either went to the chocolate shop, the old chocolate shop, which was on State Street between just a door or two off of Francis Street, and chicken salad and a chocolate malt was our favorite Sunday night menu. And if we had a Sunday night date, we would usually go to a movie because that would get us home in time to not be out late like we did on Friday and Saturday. Memorial Union didn't exist until I was in school. And if you can see the old Badgers, you will see that the plans for that were listed in the 1924 Badger. The sketches are not accurate, but it indicates that they were going to try and break ground soon. Well, it was longer than that that we before the ground was broken, but it's interesting to see in the 24 Badger that there are sketches of the Union and a plan for what was going to, how it was going to be used and developed. The Union was dedicated, and the pictures of that are shown on page 179 of the 1930 Badger. We all went down to see the dedication of it, and we well remember that before the Union was built, on that corner was the old gray private residence that had been turned into the Cardinal base of operations, and it was just an old house, and there were desks all over the place, and lots of writing being done in the different rooms for the different parts of the Cardinal, which we read every day. It was delivered to the house every morning in numerous copies, so we each had a copy every day. Yes, on 65, the Union, we proms were held there, and the Panhill Ball, many other dances were in the Union, and of course those who were not eating their meals in sorority houses enjoyed having being able to go into the cafeteria and eat their meals there a great deal. 66, yes, everybody had equal access to the Union and other buildings. I can't imagine, everybody was free to go in. We were supposed, I believe, to be members of the Union. And I believe we joined as life members of the Union at that time, and I still have my life membership in that as well as the Alumni Association. 67, the fads and hobbies popular during our college years. The boys sometimes wore what they called plus fours in clothes. We wore fur coats most of the time in order to keep from freezing because it was cold weather in the wintertime walking up that hill, though not everybody had them, but some of the boys even had long fur coats. Number 68, certain books everyone was reading, if there were, I don't remember what they were. And as far as leisure reading, we had so much reading to do for English courses and French. For my French minor, I had a lot of French books to read. We really read so much on the courses that we didn't do too much leisure reading. 69, the movie idols of the day. I can remember going to the Parkway up on the square, which is where between State Street and Wisconsin Avenue, to see Al Jolson in the Jazz Singer. It was the first of the talking pictures, and we saw those in Madison at that time. And we also went to the Orpheum for movies, and the Capitol, where I believe the Madison Art Center is now. And we went to all of them. There were some I don't remember whether there were any live stage. Seems to me the ORF had live stage shows occasionally. I mean, that is like vaudeville, but never theater. Any theater was done in the Union, of course, but that wasn't until after the Union was opened, of course. Radio shows, we didn't have our own radios and TVs and record players as everybody does now. We had a radio down in the drawing room or the living room of the house, but I don't remember anybody having radios around their rooms too much. Number 71, the Daily Cardinal. Yes, we read it every morning, usually at the breakfast table, to see what was going on campus. And there was no other campus publication at the time except for the Octopus, which was the humorous magazine, and the sketches in it were charming and interesting. And I don't remember any other campus publications. I don't believe Harrisfoot had a magazine of their own, but the Harrisfoot shows were priceless. 72, decide a typical date. The boys would call us ahead of time and ask us if we'd like to go out at certain time and certain place, and we usually said if it was the right person, we'd say yes, we would. And they'd come dressed to go out to meet us, and we would come downstairs and meet them in the hall or the living room of the sorority house and go out, and they usually had a car of their own, and most often we would double date because we would be going to Esther Beach or Hollywood to go dancing, which was our favorite occupation, and or else go to a movie. If we were to a movie, we often walked because it wasn't far to the theater. Question 3, attitudes regarding alcohol. Occasionally some of the boys drank a little beer, but I very seldom saw anybody have too much. Some of them smoked. There were nothing, as far as drugs were concerned, that was never even heard of. Sex was still there was a lot of flirtation, of course, but there was very little actual intercourse, I think, as far as the students were concerned. There was probably some, but we didn't know much about it in those days. 74. My parents expressed their views on social lives of students. My father had heard some remarks of there being excesses at Wisconsin, but he and mother assumed that I would know what I'd been out around enough that I knew how to behave myself, so they assumed that there were some that didn't behave, but assumed that my friends would. 75, intramural sports popular. They were, with the boys particularly, not so much with the girls. I wasn't involved any, though I loved to play tennis, but I seldom played at Wisconsin. 76, the major spectator sports, football, basketball, we went to all of those and bought our tickets in groups at the house, usually, because we would get them so we could all sit together. 77, Wisconsin was a national power in football, I should say, a Big Ten power there also. Basketball, yes. 78, Wisconsin athletes prominent on campus. Oh, I have to think. My senior year, Ted Thielander was awarded the conference medal, and Luigi Stedman and Bob Evans were on the athletic board, I remember. Milt Gantenbein, whom I had known since I was a child in lacrosse, was captain-elect of the football team. But do you remember, it was in that year that the field house was built. That seems like it's been there a long time now, but it was under construction our senior year at the university. 79, was it common to take dates to sporting events? Not usually. The boys usually bought their tickets together at the house as we girls did. And school spirit was mostly with yelling and when something exciting happened in the event. And of course the cheerleaders supervised that. What were the major social events of the year? There was always prom and Panhell Ball, and spring and fall, all the fraternity and the sorority houses each had their spring formals and their Christmas formals. And so we attended a lot of those. Probably Panhell Ball. Panhell was given by the assorted sororities. And in Panhell Ball, we invited the boys who had invited us or with whom we were going at the time. 81, did I have a part-time, to go back to 80, there was always a major big band playing in the Great Hall of the Union for the Panhell Ball. And that was one of the major events of the year. And then there was also the prom and summer school prom, too, which was also held in the Union with a major band. And we all loved those big bands. And that was one thing our children missed, was the big band era. We're sorry they didn't get in on that. 81, no, I did not have a job during school. 82, I was a clergyman's daughter. And as far as religion in my life as a student, it went to nil because I had felt so obligated to go to church and so much at home that I admit I didn't go at school very much. Occasionally I did if a date wanted to take me to church on Sunday morning. We usually went on Easter morning and went to church. Student clubs. 83, why did I decide to join a sorority? I had friends in many of them before I ever went, and it just seemed like the thing to do. 84, experiences during rush. The first introduction to sorority life at all, before we ever went to school, we received invitations sent by each of the sororities to which we had been recommended by friends. We received invitations to teas given on a certain weekend. I believe it was both on Friday and Saturday. And you had to split your dates because you couldn't begin to go to all of them in a day. And so you would try to spend a few minutes. You had to ration your time, spending a few minutes at each house to which you were invited. Then from the impression you made at the first rushing tea, you would receive invitations at the place you were living in Madison from the assorted sororities to luncheons and dinners, which were also split events for the next weekend. And at that weekend, you were invited to luncheon, and you would eat lunch at one place, then you would be excused from the table and go to another place and visit another sorority house and visit with those girls. The same thing would happen at dinner, and that would be I believe it was both Friday and Saturday of this following the rush tea. Then, whether there was another weekend for that or not, I'm not sure. I think just one. Then on Sunday, as I remember, after those were over, we were given preference cards to make out and list the sororities in order of our choice. The sorority girls, meanwhile, would list the rushees in the order of their choice, and those choices would be reconciled, I believe, in the dean's office. And then we were sent a card telling us which our first, second, and third choices had been accepted or not. Then on, was it Sunday afternoon at a stated hour, we went to the sorority house that had chosen us, that we had chosen also, and were escorted there. I don't know whether we were escorted by members of the sorority then or not, but during rush, if we had a split date, the girls from one sorority would escort us to the other sorority house. But I think we went to the pledging ceremony by ourselves from the place we lived in Madison. And then there would be a pledge ceremony at the sorority house, where we were given our pledge pins and initiated into the pledge group of the sorority. Question 85, yes, there was an initiation ceremony, which was very formal and very impressive, usually at night with candlelight. Hazing only on the superficial. We had to wear funny clothes around the house for a day and do the bidding of all the seniors and things like that, but nothing really radical. 86, I think I've explained how acceptance was determined by the choice of the sororities and the girls themselves. Did membership this is 87, to a certain extent, I suppose. At one time, the six oldest sororities on campus were called the Big Six, but in our day that had sort of disintegrated and you chose the sorority of your choice and they chose you, and sorority life did give you a certain cachet on campus, I think, and because of the social life, mainly with the spring and fall formals, and it gave you an introduction if somebody, so that you met more people. I had a boy call me one night and wanted a date, said he had tried his best to find somebody who could introduce him, and he couldn't do it, couldn't find anybody. So I turned him down because I had no one that could, he couldn't find anybody to introduce him to me. In this day and age, it might be different. I might have let him come to call and see how he acted. But in those days, we felt that our friends knew a lot of people and that they would introduce us to people, and we in turn introduced our friends to others. And in that way, it extended our friendship throughout the campus. Number 88, what was considered the most desirable fraternity and sorority? Well, I mentioned the that they were considered the Big Six, which were considered the least desirable. I am sure at one time when we were on campus, there was a sorority which was strictly Catholic, and I believe there were a couple of Jewish sororities. Well, those were limited because they would only consider girls of the Catholic faith or girls of Jewish nationality. But I think I don't believe those exist anymore. 89, I think I've mentioned the benefits from sorority membership. A matter of friendship, a matter of contact, many of whom I still keep in contact, but not only with my own sorority, I keep in contact with friends that were on campus when I was, from many other sororities. In fact, I went there having friends in a lot of them, and I made my choice on the decision that the girls in that house were, the most of them were girls I thought I would like to know better, and that was my choice. 90, activities I engaged in, or we helped with the getting ready for the parties and things like that, but I don't believe we had the homecoming floats. And oh, we did decorate for homecoming, yes, we did do that, but I don't believe we have the amount of decorating that is done now. And of course, they've done a lot of decorating recently, and then they take it down because of the danger of fire, and I can understand that. But those of us alums who come back on Saturday for the game often wish the decorations were still up so we could see them for Auld Lang Syne's sake. Now that's now for other students. We'll skip 91 to 93. 94, were you ever involved in student government? No, I don't know that I was particularly. Student government it was sort of, student government seemed more cut and dried, that it was just the sort of a formality, not anything really definite having an effect on the campus, though it must have had more than I realized at the time, perhaps. 95, I was never associated with the radical political groups, and it seems to me, this says the 1920s and 30s, seems to me that came after our day, in the 30s rather than the 20s. We went to the Haresfoot shows, of course, and when Haresfoot came to St. Louis the year I was at Lindenwood, Mr. Brayton, who was publisher of the Wisconsin State Journal's son, one of them, was in Haresfoot and wanted me to meet the Haresfoot group in St. Louis that night, but I was supposed to be back at Lindenwood at 6 o'clock, and there was a girls' school for you. I had to be back. I couldn't stay in St. Louis for the Haresfoot show, and that I always resented because I thought it would be such fun to see my friends from Madison, because I knew I was going to go there the next year. 97, Dean of Men and Dean of Women, Dean Goodnight was extremely good as the Dean of Men, and of course Dean Narden, who was Dean of Women, it was said of her that if you have any occasion to go to see her, don't wear a red dress or clocks in your stockings. I think it was a pipe dream, but that was what we heard said. The only time I went in to see her was when I had they had done a physical on me and said I shouldn't go to gym for 6 weeks, so I didn't go and went back for my physical, and there was some misunderstanding that I should have, and they thought I had skipped the classes, but I hadn't, except on medical definition. 98, I don't know that I did have any contact with the deans on campus in those days. Since those days when I've been on the Board of Visitors, I've gotten to know them all. 99, UW's president the years you attended school. Glenn Frank was president of the university when I was in school, and his tragic death and with that of his son in an automobile accident ended his career, of course. I never knew him as I knew Conrad Alvium and Fred Harrington and the others who came after him, because I had known them through the board, of course, and Wisconsin Women's Day. Question 100. Any contact with the Regents, only because they were personal friends. Arthur Holmes from La Crosse had been a Regent, and his daughter, Pat Johns, was, when I was on a nominating committee for the National Board of the Alumni Association, her name was brought up, and I could say that I had known 5 generations of her family, including her children, and that I was sure she would make an excellent secretary for our Alumni Association. Other than that, I didn't know the Regents until after I was on the board. Question 101. We had friends in Madison, of course, and merchants were very accommodating. In those days, they did not give credit cards to students because of the danger of them being stolen and misappropriated. After I was graduated, when our daughter was in school, she had a sales slip stolen from her purse and things charged to us on our credit card at Madison because they had used her name. But Manchester's were very kind about straightening it out. But we were on our way to the Minnesota game when the mail came with the charging of all this material to us, which we hadn't done. So we went up to Manchester's and had it all settled, but that was another generation than this. Question 102, the Depression. I was there when the crash came and was taking Econ 1A, and Mr. Kiekhofer, who was called Wild Bill Kiekhofer because of his enthusiasms, I guess, was lecturing to us in Econ 1A, and I can remember yet his saying to us, "This is a moment in history. Some of you will not be back at school next year. Some of you will not be back next semester. Some of you may not be back next week, because the economic system of our United States has hit a crisis." And he went on to explain how the crash of the stock market would affect a lot of people. And so that actually the Depression didn't have any great effect on me. It affected those later, because you see, we were graduated in 1930, and it was the years after that that the Depression had the greatest effect on the number of students who came, the difference in the way they dressed, the lack of sororities and fraternities, and the fact that most of them had to get jobs in order to carry on their student life. 103, I was the war and did not affect our lives as students. Number 4, career goals. I assumed I would be a teacher, but teachers were a dime a dozen in those days. I was offered jobs, but the amount was approximately $100 a month, which was insufficient to pay board and room and railroad fare to the schools and back again. And my family, who had just moved to Stevens Point, suggested I stay at home and go to the college there and see what the normal school would offer. There was no master's degree program then. They did offer a Bachelor of Education. They told me if I could come and take anything I wanted to, either as a regular course or as an audited course, if I would take one education course, they could grant me an education degree, because I already had more education at Wisconsin than Stevens Point required. I did that, and enjoyed taking Carl Russell Fish's Representative Americans, which I had never been able to get in, which was given by Herb Steiner from his own lecture notes of the course, and was granted my Bachelor of Education degree from there as well, in addition to Madison, my Bachelor of Arts. Then I did substitute teaching in Stevens Point High School, and I went over to the Hardware, which was the Hardware Mutual Casualty Company, and applied for a position. The only openings they had for girls was through the advertising clerical department, which was typing addresses on envelopes, something I had never done. And I appealed to our neighbor, who was head of the commercial department of the high school, to teach me to type, and nothing flat, Edith. She said, come to high school at 1 o'clock. There's nobody in there. You can have a blank typewriter and a book, and that's all you need is a little practice. So I did that for 3 weeks and got myself a job. Ended up as the first woman hired by the Hardware, woman college graduate hired, and ended up as the first woman member of the Home Office Supervisory Department, a job I thoroughly enjoyed, and was offered a very nice promotion into the president's office when I told my boss, I'm sorry, I have a better offer, and showed him my engagement ring. 1905, did your education help prepare you for these career goals? Most certainly. I was doing I had all the material. I was home office manual and bulletin clerk, technically. But it meant that everything sent out from the company came across my desk to be corrected for language, spelling, specific statements of the fact that the supervisory department, if any, was responsible for informing members of the company if any change was made in the insurance law throughout the United States. Then we had to inform the members of the company how that affected them and what they had to do about it. Overseeing that it was said properly and in the proper language, and it was most interesting, it was responsible, and I loved the job, but I had a better one. 107, current thoughts on the quality and scope of the university you received at Wisconsin. I've done nothing but urge my children and their friends to continue their education, be it at Wisconsin or someplace else, but that I thought Wisconsin offered one of the better schools for a future of their education. 108, comment on the state of the arts, theater, music, art, and dance when you were at Wisconsin. Until the Union Theater was built, we didn't have as much theater as we would have liked. There was quite a lot of music. And of course, we loved our art history courses with Otto Hagen. And Miss Dobler was very noted as her dance instruction, and Wisconsin, her courses were sought throughout the United States for that. Since then, I have been involved in the arts more and the Alumni Association. Most of the plays were given in Bascom Theater, as I remember, by the Wisconsin Players. And Dr. Herman Werke, who was later head of the orthopedic department of the University of Wisconsin Hospitals, could have had a career on the stage as well as in medicine, because he was a fabulous Cyrano de Bergerac, as well as many other characters, which he played with to the great delight of all of us on the stage of Wisconsin Players. He was such fun and so very talented in both medicine and the arts. We enjoyed him most thoroughly. Paul Fulcher was my advisor for my thesis, which was written on Saki, who was Hector Hugh Monroe, and he wrote Guests of Summer and autographed it for me, and I gave it to Wisconsin's own library, which is now housed in the library building. That library was started by Mary Rennebaum, that's the wife of Governor Rennebaum, when they lived in the old governor's mansion at the end of Langdon Street, where the bookshelves in the living room were absolutely bare. They were on either side of the fireplace, curved at the top, and I remember being there for a tea, and Mrs. Rennebaum saying that it was a shame that those were empty, and she wanted to collect all the books from Wisconsin writers she could and start a Wisconsin's own library, and that was the beginning of it, and that's where my book went, as those from many others throughout the state. There has also been a collection of books and textbooks written by Wisconsin authors which have been collected and I believe are also in the library, because a number of textbooks that we had, I sent to that because a list was sent out of the book. We were to send in a list of the books we had, and any they did not have, they would notify us. And I did so, and I believe that was done through, not through, particularly through the university, because I remember taking the books to someone out on the west side of Madison who was to deliver them to the library. In our day also, Memorial Day and Senior Swing Out were celebrated on the Hill. And there was a Memorial Day ceremony on Memorial Day, and then Senior Swing Out was in May, where the seniors, girls, and the junior girls were in procession up the hill, and the torch of learning, I guess it was symbolically meant to be, was handed from the juniors to the seniors to carry on the traditions of the university. Also, back in 1924, Badger, you will find Elizabeth Waters written up on page 180, and she is the Wisconsin University graduate of 1881 with a BS degree, who was did a great deal of work in education throughout Wisconsin, and it was she for whom Liz Waters Hall is named. To go back to the question on sports at Wisconsin, there was always an ice skating rink on the lower campus, and there were later Quonset huts there too, when more housing was needed. But there was always an ice skating rink there where the hockey team played, and we would often watch the hockey teams play there as well as skate ourselves on other times. And there was a toboggan slide up on the north side of the hill from in Muir Woods down the hill out toward Picnic Point, and that was a long slide, and we would go almost to the crack out, which existed out from Picnic Point. In fact, we went down, we would go up to Bernard's boat landing, from which we could rent boats in the summertime, and in the wintertime the boys would rent ice boats and take us for a ride on the lake. We went out one time and it was pretty windy, and Bernard's were loath to let the boys take the boats out, but they said they knew how to run it, so they let them take it. We went out, got over to Picnic Point, and the jib broke. We were stranded. One of the bigger boats came out to rescue us, and they put my roommate and me in the main part of the boat, and the boys were out on the spar on either side. We tacked quickly to come about, and Jimmy Bolton of Racine, when a red stocking calf spun off across that lake on the seat of his pants and convulsed all of us. It was a funny sight, I'll grant you that. But those were winter sports for all of us, and we enjoyed them all. To go back to question 34 regarding grades, as I remember, A's were 92 to 100, B's 95 to 92, C 78 to 85, D 72 to 78, and F 72 and under. Luckily, I don't think I ever had anything but an A, B, or a C, but I was very happy when the A's came in. In fact, the last exam I ever wrote at Wisconsin was a 3-page single-space econ quiz. When I read it through, there wasn't a single thing that wasn't just as easy as spelling C-A-T for cat, and all I could think of was, can I ever get this written down fast enough? Will I forget it? But I didn't. Everything went through my card, and from my boo book came back saying, you wrote an A-plus exam, you have an A-plus on the course. And I said it was worth a college education to have it. That happened just once in my life. When we moved to Berlin in 1939, there was a Wisconsin Alumni Club active in this area. And my husband and I went to the dinners and met the members of the university faculty and alumni association who came to the dinners with us. I served my term as president. During that time, when it came to our annual banquet, I suggested that we invite not only the alumni in the area, but also the parents of children who were attending the university at that time. we did feel that that was an excellent contact for those parents to become acquainted with people who had attended Madison and whose children were there then. And it gave a very interesting contact, we felt, for all of us. And it was carried on for a few years, but at the present time, the Alumni Association seems to have sort of faded. Those of us who were active have felt we have served our term as president and supervising the dinners, and it has sort of fallen into neglect. We hope another time that it will continue. Also, after that time, I was nominated to be a member of the National Alumni Board. I don't know who nominated me, but I was elected, and I served my term. I remember going into the first meeting and wondering if everybody would be strangers, and walked in and found Larry Fitzpatrick and Gordon Walker of Racine there. Gordon I'd known ever since we moved to Racine in 1925, and I sat down saying, "How's Sue, your wife, whom I knew, and your sister Peg," and so forth, and the meeting was called to order, and Larry said the first order of business will be the election of the new president, Gordon Walker. Well, here sat Gordon right beside me, and everybody laughed and teased us. Was I any relation? And I said, "No, I've known him longer than I've known my own husband, but we're no relation." And I served on that board. Then when the Alumni Association wished to spread its influence and contact the women graduates of the university, a few group of us, probably 15, I would say, Mrs. Craig from Janesville, Margaret Russell, and Audrey Walsh from Madison, and I've forgotten who all else, but there must have been 15 of us, were asked to come to Madison for luncheon to just brainstorm the possibility of what could be done to interest the women of the state in the university. That has made me feel like we were in on the birth of Wisconsin Women's Day, which is now called Day with the Arts. It is not only once a year, it's twice a year, and now both men and women are included. It has been a very nice contact with the university. We enjoyed doing it, and the one thing I remember saying was, "Please have it. Those young girls are beginning their families. They are so fed up with the details of living. They would love to have a day out to a day with the arts to use their brains again and hear something interesting, and have it so that they can come get a babysitter first thing in the morning, drive to Madison, come for a program for luncheon and more program, get home in time for dinner, and give them an inspiration that will keep them going when they do all the mundane things of running a household, like washing and ironing and supervising children." So that Wisconsin women, I have a soft spot in my heart for Wisconsin Women's Day because of that. Then in about 1961, I opened up the Milwaukee Journal one morning. My husband was on the golf course. My daughter was at school at Northwestern at the time, and later she transferred to Wisconsin. Our son was washing the cars. And I remember walking out to the car to Jeff and saying, "Does this say the same thing to you that it does to me?" And it said, "The University of Wisconsin Alumni Association has appointed Mrs. Llewellyn James Walker to the Board of Visitors." So I had been in contact with a lot of people through these other things. I suppose that's how I was nominated. But in 1961, I was made a member of the Board of Visitors, and I don't know anything I have enjoyed doing with or for the university which I have enjoyed or appreciated more. And it was a very interesting 6 years. I have already sent you the material I had on it, because I had assembled that before I got your questionnaire. If there's anything more that I can tell you, will you please either call me or write me a note, and I'll be glad to tell you anything else I can. I remember I did send you letterheads of several years, which will give you the name and addresses of members who were on the board at those years. And I don't think I had all 6 years' sheets. I think I'd used it all up. I was secretary for the second, third, and fourth years I was on the board. And Marjorie Bitker was secretary before me. She was a member of the Board of Visitors then, and in 1962, I have a clipping here which says, Bidwillie Gage Green Bay was elected Friday chairman of the Board of Visitors of the University of Wisconsin. He had been serving as vice chairman. Elected vice chairman in the annual elections was Mrs. Eldon Russell, 1021 Woodward Drive, Madison, who also serves as program chairman. Mrs. Llewellyn James Walker with Berlin was elected to serve as secretary treasurer, taking the place of Mrs. Robert L. Hall, Milwaukee. The board meeting in the Wisconsin Center building heard Harry Sharp, associate professor of sociology and director of the Survey Research Laboratory of the university, describe a survey which his group could conduct. The Board of Visitors has been asked by the Regents to make a study of higher education in the state, to which it was felt that a survey of public opinion had a bearing. In line with that, we not only had meetings at Milwaukee, but we also went to several of the other smaller schools at, was it at Medford? I believe so, that they were the smaller schools which were associated with the university, and reported back to the Regents on what we found in their subject matter. And at Madison, and at Milwaukee, I remember the chairman of the engineering department came in one day saying he was, and I had known him from the day we were in college together. He dated a girl in our house who was a good friend. His name was James Van Vliet, and he said, I've been urging my engineering students to take, to somehow get in more liberal arts subjects, because if they are an engineer only, they really, if they take only engineering subjects, they aren't broadly enough educated. And I thought that was a very excellent recommendation on Jim's part. Marjorie Bitker was a member of the Board of Visitors and was secretary before I was. She appeared in the book, which was written by Don Gold, called When the Singing Stops, A Celebration of Life of Old Age in America. That book was printed in 1979 by Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. It has vignettes of a number of people not as young as they used to be, and among them, one of them is Marjorie. And I saw the book first in our own library when on the cover of the book were in ovals were the pictures of the people who were in the book. And here was Marjorie. I walked in and recognized her. So of course I read it, and it was very interesting, and I wrote to her to congratulate her. And her note was interesting in part by saying that my bit, which was dictated into the tape recorder in the presence of the author, whom I'd never laid eyes on before, produced acute embarrassment in me. However, I really did enjoy reading about my fellow tapees. One of them, Milton Rettenberg, somewhere in the back of the book, happened to play the piano with the trio that provided music for my first wedding way back when. Small World Department. Unquote. When I first went on the board, I believe the board of the term was for 4 years, but we felt that if the turnover of the board every year of a few, that it really, we couldn't accomplish all we wanted to do in that time, and we thought it was advisable to change the term to 6 years, which we did by a vote of the board itself with the approval, I guess, of the Regents. And so I served 6 years on the board. In 1979, my term would have been over, and I would have enjoyed, 68 it was over. I misspoke, 68. And I served 1961 to 67. And in 67, the other members of the board were kind enough to indicate that I might be appointed if I so desired. But at that time, we knew something was wrong with my husband, what we weren't quite sure. And Dr. Werke diagnosed chondrosarcoma of the sacroiliac joint. And I knew that much as I would have enjoyed work on the Board of Visitors again, that no one could take care of my husband but me, and someone else could serve the university. As it happened, Connie Alvium, the widow of Conrad Alvium, the president, served 2 terms after I did, in my place. And I was very glad that she could do it. Question B. My colleagues on the board, I've given you a list of them, and also their pictures, which you will probably enjoy looking at, that have the names on the back of the pictures. You already have that in the envelope which I sent you. Yes, there was always a chairman who presided at all the meetings. and a vice chairman, who was also program chairman usually, and a secretary treasurer. There were no funds to speak of because there were no real dues, but it seems to me we did put in a few dollars to use for anything that the board thought was important by way of flowers for somebody, of illness or something like that. We were responsible to the regents, and we did anything that was requested. The regents are so involved with the financial problems of the university that they do not have time to investigate any education forms particularly. I remember very definitely going to visit several of the classes on campus just as an interested spectator so we could report back to the board. We each of us went to a different class so that we could report back how we thought the classes were progressing since our day when we had been in school. Question three, my job responsibilities. I was a secretary for 3 years. I would take notes frantically all during the meeting. We usually met on Friday morning all day, had lunch together, and very often dinner together. Then we would often meet again on Saturday morning until noon. And if it were a game day, our spouses would join us and we'd all go to the game. And we had tickets together up in the top of the stadium, which was very nice, though we retained our own so we could have it in the day we weren't on the board. And we gave those to friends who went down with us. I would take the notes, then I would come home and spend Monday mulling them over and spend Tuesday typing them out. Then I would send the transcribed notes back to Kathy Thornton, I believe she was, who was secretary to Leroy Luberg, who was Dean of Public Services. And it would be their office's responsibility to have the report of the minutes of the Board of Visitors transcribed onto duplicated material and sent back to each of the board members, as well as, I believe, the regents, the president's office, and aside from that, I can't tell you who all did receive them. I believe Dean Luberg's, Dean of Public Services office could tell you, since Leroy Luberg is no longer living. C, describe in detail your job responsibilities. Mainly, did they differ from my colleagues? Mainly the 3 years I was secretary. Yes, I did that particularly. And then we would visit classes. We'd discuss what everybody reported, and more often than not, we had members of the faculty, students. We would have probably half a dozen people come in and talk with us, and we would make recommendations what we thought. I remember that included among the people that I remember coming in were Jeff Greenfield, who now appears on Sunday morning on Charles Kuralt's program quite often, as well as on other network programs. He was editor of the Cardinal at the time, and we were discussing how the Cardinal was representing the university and was it in a fair light and so forth, and we called him in and we discussed the situation with him. Another time, Dr. Ira Baldwin came in. And I remember his very interesting and kind remarks about, and especially interesting ones about the university and about, at that time I remember our discussion was about what was the better type of school for our children. And I laughed and said, well, I've tried them all. If you want the voice of experience, unquote, I've started out in Indianapolis in the first grade and to the fourth grade, and the Indianapolis schools were then considered model schools, and we had observers all the time. Then we went to La Crosse, and it was so cold that though I was entered in the normal schools, model school, I went to the city school for the rest of that year until I was acclimated to the bitter cold of Wisconsin, when I'd never seen snow stay on the ground before. Then I went to the normal, was graduated from the normal school, model school, then from La Crosse Central High School, then entered the normal school for 4 months until when my family moved to Racine, when I went to Kemper Hall for that year because I was only 16, as I said. Then to Lindenwood for 1 year, which is a private boarding school for girls in St. Charles, Missouri, just out of St. Louis. and then to Madison, and then to Stevens Point. So I've tried every variety of schooling. So I remember Dr. Baldwin and we discussing which we would send our children to if we had our choice. Number three, or D, who drafted the final report? I think we all worked at that. We took information from the minutes that I had written up during the year or the other secretaries had, and we all went over it together and decided what we wanted to have in it, and I think we submitted them to the regents. As feedback, I don't remember anything particular that we had. They seemed to appreciate our efforts. We often had lunch with them, and we would discuss anything of current interest to either of our boards together. Question E, I halfway answered that. We'd have luncheon with them and discuss in the state government. We really had little contact with them. The administrators, we got to know the members of the presidents, of course, and the deans of public services and deans of the different schools, and also members of the faculty and members of the student body who came in as at our request or at their request for discussions of any current problems that the university was having or that we thought we could help improve the university. F, about the history of the Board of Visitors, I think I sent you all the material on that and I didn't take time to reread it. If you have any questions or if you want to contact any of the members who are in Madison right there, that they would be glad to help, I'm sure. Yes, the responsibilities and duties have changed over the time. I believe now there are Boards of Visitors for the other sections of the universities, which we used to call normal schools, and then were teachers' colleges, and now are sections of the university. But those have been developed since I was on the board. I know nothing of their how they are made up or how often they meet or anything like that. Someone there in Madison can certainly tell you that. Any books, articles that deal with the history of the board, I sent you what I had. And I also sent you a list of the members who were on with me at the time and their addresses. If you wish any more in regard to that, I will be most happy to see if I can find anything else, though I think I've sent you the majority of the material, which would be most informative. I've enjoyed this. I hope you have, and if there's anything more I can contribute, I would be very happy to. The best of luck to both of you, Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Tyker, doctors. I'll be interested in hearing what happens as a result of all this, and it will be fun to see it. I hope our grandchildren will head for Wisconsin one of these days. Good luck. Postscript. I do remember the Board of Visitors making a study of the School of Architecture and the Veterinary School and whether they should be added to Wisconsin's curriculum. As you all know, the veterinary school is a fait accompli, and I don't know what has happened regarding the architectural school. I think I had the study of the architectural school to send to you with the material I sent to you. Also, the performing arts series, which is happening in Berlin, has had its program augmented a great deal in recent years because of the help of the universities. A School of Music and the Arts Outreach Program. We had the Pro Arte Quartet a couple of times. We've had the Brass Quintet. We've had the Karp Manoogian Trio, the Jazz Ensemble, and the Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra, all from Madison. When the Pro Arte Quartet came the first time, Barb Swan, who has worked with them in cooperation with the university on this a great deal, had three children at home, and she said to me, they are giving a seminar at school and then would like to rest a little while before the program at night. Would it be possible that they could come to your house where there's more peace and quiet than there is at mine right now to relax a few minutes and for an hour or so? And I said, of course, I'd be glad to. And so I've given them, anybody from Wisconsin, a standing invitation to come and relax here if they wish in between seminars and concerts. So they have been here, and I've enjoyed having them. And I mentioned it to Arlie Mux one day, and he said, there's an idea for the rest of the Alumni Association to think up when the concert series goes out. So I hope that will help at some time for some of that, too. But we're looking forward to seeing the orchestra on the 14th, or the 27th of this year. Thank you very much. Au revoir. Here's a postscript. Did you ever know, I didn't till I started looking this up, that on page 481 of the 1924 Badger, the Ku Klux Klan is listed? There are 18 fraternities and about twice that many, about an equal number of seniors and juniors, all of the men listed as members of the Ku Klux Klan. I never knew it existed at Wisconsin at all, but I thought that was an interesting item which I had missed up at this point. I suppose you know where all the fraternity and sorority houses used to be before their current locations. Sterling Court opened off Park Street about at the end of Barnard Hall's driveway and dead-ended into a court, into a street with right angles. In that court was the Gamma Phi House, the Kappa House, and the Phi Psi House was on the corner of the intersecting, it was on the corner of the intersecting street there on State Street, all of which have been demolished to make way for the Elvium and the Humanities Building. The old Phi Gamma House was where the Evans Scholars House is now. They built the present Phi Gamma House while we were in school, and they were in the process of building it, and the circular stairway had only the risers. It did not have the steps on it, and the boys had been showing us the house, and that night we discovered someone in a fur coat prowling around the roof of the Great Hall. How he got up there, we never found out, but we called the police lest he fall trying to get back down again. We never did find out who he was, but it was funny. And the current Alpha Zeta Delta house was next door to the Phi Gamma house at 12 Langdon then. The down on Mendota Court was the SAE house, where it still is now. Behind it was the Delta house, Delta Tau Delta. Next to that was the Beta house, Beta Phi Theta. And, what was the White House across the court from the Beta House? I've forgotten. But a lot of the houses have changed. All along Lake Street, where the Alumni House now stands, on the lake was the Sigma Chi House and then the Phi Delta Theta House. So the layout of the fraternities have changed over the years somewhat, but it's sort of fun to remember where they used to be. I must be nearly out of tape. My telephone number is 414-361-0553 if I can furnish any further information. Good luck.